Full fairness, I need to admit that my presentation is co-presented and co-written by my colleague and co-author, partner, and I'm trying to always get this right because I always get it wrong. I am her husband, Elizabeth DeFoy. I can't tell you how many times I have gotten it reversed. I'm a slow learner. We both teach at the University of Maine in disability studies, and our area of practice, graduate and undergraduate, involves health policy, policy analysis, and access. As a part of kind of beginning the conversation, I think I went to the U.S. Census Bureau to look at some of the latest statistics that were reported on folks who had some kind of a diagnosed medically based disability. And of the people 25 to 64 years old without a diagnosed medical disability, 72.5% reported very good or excellent health. Pretty high standard. 23.8% reported good health, and 3.7% reported fair health or poor health. Now that's not great because we still got 3.8% not reporting positive health. Of folks diagnosed with non-severe medical disabilities, so those folks who had some kind of a medical condition which qualified them under the Americans with Disabilities Act for a diagnosis of disability, whatever that might be, 33.4% reported very, very good or excellent health, and 25.4% reported fair or poor health. For people with a severe medically diagnosed disability category, 12.7% reported very good or excellent health, while 63.1% perceived their health to be fair or poor. And so if we just kind of compare those two perceptions of health status, it appears that there may be some relationship between somebody's diagnosed condition of disability and perhaps the issue of a perception of health status. Also in this U.S. Census Bureau report, they reported health insurance coverage, which the added piece there is what we're asserting is a euphemism for access to health care, because I'm not always certain that having health insurance really means you have access. But among folks 25 to 64 years old, most people without a diagnosed medical disability were covered by private or military insurance, 81.3%. People with non-severe medical diagnosed disabilities, 76.3%. Moving on, and clearly staying with our euphemism of access to healthcare here, people diagnosed with severe medical with a severe medical diagnosed disability were more likely to be covered by government-provided insurance, 45.9%, than those people without a disability, 3.6%. And I'm sure, standing here in Washington, D.C., I'm not knocking government-provided health insurance. But I think there are, we can acknowledge, there are some health insurance policies that come from the government that really are not always up to what other folks might have in terms of private stuff. So we give it for that. That's the slate that we begin with. In order to look at this, how do I understand what this might mean, I'm going to suggest a couple of ways of looking at this. One is the two theoretical foundations. One is explanatory legitimacy theory, which provides a framework for the conversation around policy analysis and policy modeling, and then an evaluation practice. And I'll explain that in just a moment. Explanatory legitimacy takes a non-rational policy analysis approach to looking at these things, whether it's health policy or some other approach. It looks to and understands that there may be diverse explanations which give rise to a variety of responses. So when we look at that data and said people were unsatisfied, there may be multiple explanations in addition to that medical diagnosis. And maybe the medical diagnosis has nothing to do with it, and maybe it is pure economics, which I don't want us to forget. It could just be that. It could be people can't pay for that. They don't have the money. Problem mapping, and I'll show you the problem map as a way of thinking about this issue, provides a systematic thinking process to help organize and expand non-rational understanding of issues and problems to be changed. And I differentiate that between the traditional models of policy analysis that many of us have been trained in, I know I was, that looked at a linear, rational approach to kind of conceptualizing and trying to understand what was going on. The policy analysis, or policy as we all know, is not a static process. And therefore, because it's not a static process, I think to understand the nuances of what are happening out in our communities, we have to have a process that's dynamic, that allows a certain amount of flow and a certain amount of variability. And that's what this approach that I'm suggesting is going to do for us. And so we come up with this colorful map, and I'll take us through this map a little bit, but this is one way of thinking about issues of health access, health opportunity. If you look in the middle, there's a yellow box that really is at the heart of talking about inequity in health, or inequity in health opportunity, whether we're talking about being able to get to that office, that hospital, or you don't have the insurance to cover that payment. So you begin at that point. If you go up to the top of the slide, we're really talking about the more cultural, global influences on that inequity in health. And you can see there can be a variety of them. If we move down towards the bottom, we begin talking about the impact of that inequity on you and me, and ultimately seeing it as a violation of my social justice values. This gets tied in to the conversation we have about social and civil justice. And I'll go through, I selected and highlighted a couple of the things that I just want to talk to us about. When we look at issues around, and clearly part of the issues up there in terms of inequity in health, we look at the think far and on discrimination, and clearly part of our conversation here, as well as elsewhere at APHA, needs to be looking at categorical discrimination that happens, as we know, against groups, against individuals, because they're members of groups, so you can't get into the facility, you don't have access, you're denied coverage, you're denied opportunity for employment, you're denied opportunity to being able to afford that. And there are a couple of ultimate responses that we can make to that. If we do an accommodative response, we say, okay, we're going to make this available to you because you fall into this particular category, but I don't have to pay any attention to anybody else because I've got you taken care of in this accommodative response. It's a short-term affirmative kind of policy. So I look at folks, in this case I'm talking about disability, I look at folks and I come up with a policy for folks with spinal cord injuries. But my gosh, let me forget about all the rest of those folks because I got this one group of folks covered. I'm not saying that's not necessary. That's absolutely necessary, and we shouldn't forget that. But I would hope at some point in time we could have a conversation where we begin looking at a constructed view that begins looking at universal health policy, and not just for the group of folks that I was asked to come here today to talk about through the disability, but that we look at universal health policy for all the people in the room and all the people in the greater Washington, D.C., and all the people in the United States. We get having that larger conversation about how do we expand that coverage. When we look at limited provider knowledge, that could be another explanation of why when I show up, somebody doesn't know what to do with me. There we can look at issues around expanding curriculum. Could be a number of policy ventures that we do there. Policies to support provider training, whether it's the Maternal and Child Health Board, whether it's NIH or HRSA kinds of initiatives. Those are all possible solutions or possible policy approaches. If we look at the other thing in terms of we talked about inaccessible health resources, the explanation being individual or constructed, we begin having conversations about what is the doctor's office, what does the hospital look like, what are all of those things, what happens when you go in the door, and not just what happens when you go in the door physically, but what happens when you go in the door and you're given information. Is that in a manner that you can accept it? Is it a manner that you can understand it cognitively, perceptively? Can you read it? Can you understand it? Do the symbols make sense to you? If we move down, we begin looking at with the consequences of that, of not addressing those issues up above, end up being poor quality of life, end up being things like decreased productivity, end up being increased cost of health care, and increase in taxes, because if I can't get my health care immediately in my physician's office, I'm going to have to go someplace where it's going to cost more. And ultimately, the point that I would like to make in terms of looking through this is, this ultimately is a violation, becomes a civil rights and a social justice issue. And for me, it begins up in economics. So thank you for that. And moving down into that conversation. Our charge here, as a group, our charge here as part of APHA, I think, is to analyze, rethink, and implement health policies that shape our world as one that is welcoming for all. Thank you.